guys, welcome to this episode of the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. Jeremy Shamos has been getting rave reviews for his performance in the new Broadway play, Clybourne Park. So good, in fact, that he was just nominated for a Tony Award for Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Play. How cool is that? The show, written by Bruce Norris, was handed a total of 4 nominations: Best Play, Best Scenic Design of a Play, Best Direction of a Play, and, like I just said, Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Play. The show borrows some of the plot of Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin in the Sun. The first act takes place in 1959 Clybourne Park. A white couple has just sold their house to a black family as their nervous neighbors come over and try to convince the couple to stop the sale. Act 2 begins 50 years later with a young white couple about to buy that same house, raise it, and start fresh. That idea is met with complete disapproval from the now African-American residents of the community. Each actor in the show plays dual roles, and Jeremy plays Carl in Act 1, the neighbor who disapproves of the sale. And in Act 2, he plays Steve, part of the couple wanting to buy that house. When I asked Jeremy if either role was easier to grab hold of, he told me that Norris's writing was so specific that both characters kind of weirdly came natural to him. Jeremy is a 2-time Drama Desk nominee and Obie Award winner whose prior Broadway credits include Ealing, Reckless, and The Rivals. After talking to Jeremy, I can honestly say that he is really an incredibly nice, funny, and talented guy, and you know what? I sincerely hope he wins a Tony Award. I talked to him about Clybourne Park and his dual roles, how he prepares for a part, and his advice to actors. This is really, really, really a great interview, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Here's some more reallys for you. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers. Every little click does help. That is how this website stays alive. And don't forget, we also sell casting director and agent mailing labels and have a bunch of other cool actor services available. You can check all of that out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Jeremy.
You've been with this show from the very beginning, like 2010, right?
Yeah, all of us have. That's the kind of extraordinary thing about it, I think. We all have.
And
it's the same cast, and it's the same, it's every single, you know, every single production element, and everything's the same. The designers, the everyone.
From, I guess, preview night to opening night last week, were you guys still, even then, tweaking things?
We were kind of like polishing things up, and also weirdly kind of unpolishing things and letting things, you know, find their place where they were when we were sort of spontaneously finding them. And there were some lighting tweaks that needed to be. I mean, you know, we moved from when we did it at Playwrights, it was like a 200 seat proscenium, and then when we did it at the Taper, it was in, I guess it's like a 750 seat, but it's really a big, you know, it's a big thrust there. So we kind of restaged it for there, and then now it's back at the Walter Kerr, you know, like a 1,000-seat proscenium again. So we had to restage it for the proscenium. And also, it's just sort of, because the play is so, it's so audience, I don't know what the word is, not dependent, but it definitely is sort of almost interactive in terms of the way people respond to certain things, that, you know, it took us a while to figure out the house and to figure out how things play. And, you know, at the Taper, things would sort of, certain laughs would kind of roll around the house. And then in a proscenium, things can kind of hit more directly because everyone's kind of out front in the same spot. So it's like some interesting timing things that we had to figure out, and how things play and how much volume is needed, and how big to play things and how small we can possibly get away with playing things. And, so yeah, we were sort of tweaking and playing with it all along. And because we're a group that we have worked together for so long and we like to work together so much, we kind of still, you know, we were still enjoying the tweaking process and sort of trying to figure out if I think I can get this line in before that laugh, or, you know, that kind of a thing, or I think we can play this like a little bit more loosely. And, you know, It's a fun group to play with, and we've been doing it long enough that I feel like we can we can let things roll a little bit in a really fun way.
How'd you initially get the part? Did you have to audition for it?
Actually, the very first public reading of the play, playwrights had already committed to doing it just based on the actual play. And so they were doing a reading of it about three or four months before they started rehearsals for it. And because another theater company was thinking about co-producing it, so they wanted to put together a reading. And so out of the seven people in that original reading, the very first reading, four of us are in the cast. So we did it, and then, you know, pretty soon after that reading, they asked me if I would be interested in doing it. So it was a rare opportunity to not have to audition for something.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, so four of us have been with it since the very first moment that it was read, and in terms of as a reading, it was just an incredible reading. We knew it was an amazing play. I mean, from the moment that it just was read out loud, it was like, it just killed. The room was just like electric, and it was pretty clear that it was something really special. So I was excited that it turned out well.
So in the show, you play two characters. Was there ever one that was easier to grasp onto than the other?
I don't know. I think having done the reading in that way and having been cast based on the reading is sort of evidence to me that it weirdly came easy. I think Bruce's writing is so specific that if you hear a way to say what he wrote that feels somewhat natural, then you're already very well on your way to playing the character that he wrote. Just in terms of he's able to write people who talk sort of circuitously or who interrupt themselves. And if you really just, you know, deliver the text, you know, these characters are kind of, they just sort of inform you about how to be. And so I think both characters kind of came weirdly, naturally to me, and then I think there's sort of, you know, there have been certain times in the rehearsal process where I've struggled with one or the other, and just sort of like tried to figure out how to work on certain parts of one or the other, but they both felt like they fell into different parts of something that was comfortable to me, which is not necessarily saying a great thing about me because they're both pretty jackassy.
Yeah.
Annie Brees, who plays my wife in both acts, she always says that she wants to get a T-shirt that says "Oops, I married an asshole." It was like her motto for both acts.
Well, you're in New York. I'm sure they sell that at least a dozen places.
I know. They really should sell that.
Yeah. So even now for, like, playing this part for so long, are you ever uncomfortable with some of the dialogue that you might have to say?
Not really. I mean, it's pretty thrilling. I mean, I think because it's in the context of such a smart and great play, I know how it fits into the larger, you know, evening of theater. So I actually look forward to some of the more provocative things that I'd say I think are some of the most exciting parts of the play. And I think it's part of, I think one of Bruce's great strengths as a playwright is being provocative. And so to be a mouthpiece for those kinds of provocative things is exciting. I mean, I'm actually not uncomfortable. I mean, I actually sort of relish the chance to do it because, you know, I think it's an indication for me of how well written the play is, because if I didn't feel confident that the play was well written and smart and that the production itself was very well done, then saying things that were provocative just for the sake of being provocative would make me uncomfortable for sure, because it wouldn't be put into such an incredible context, and then it would just be like, wow, that guy's just kind of a dick, and I don't know why he's saying those things, you know?
Yeah.
But because I feel like it's contextualized so beautifully, I kind of relish it. I don't know, again, if that makes me, I'll use the word again, jackassy. I actually look forward to it. And I think we all kind of look forward to those moments that are, you know, the most uncomfortable on stage, to make people uncomfortable. Because I think that's sort of the heart of the play, is unsettling people. And then, you know, 90% of the time, it makes them laugh really hard. And it also, it leaves people a little bit changed, because they've been unsettled and they're thinking about things differently. And, you know, the only way to sort of unsettle people is to sometimes to push them a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to be that kind of pushing character a lot of the time.
And you kind of mentioned this earlier, but you have a vocal audience. When you were on stage, or not even that, but like, did you expect that to happen? The audience being so vocal, like, have you had people yell at you before, or like
yell, talk back.
Yeah, talk back to you?
We had actually the other night. Actually, someone. There's a moment when Frank Wood's character Russ is kicking my character Carl out of his house, and it takes him a long time to finally, you know, basically open the door and stand by the door and stand there and wait for my character to leave. And I sort of stand there deciding what to do, and I'm eventually just about to walk out, but I'm standing there and it's very, very quiet, and you know, and it's a whole Broadway house. It's like, it's very, very quiet considering that there's 950 people. And then someone was like, just go. But that actually hasn't happened. That surprisingly hasn't happened a lot. And I think people kind of groan, and, you know, I mean, audiences have different dynamics, and sometimes, you know, the audience is incredibly vocal, but not usually one person saying something or, you know, talking back.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a sort of, every night is a different kind of journey of figuring out how to traverse the various responses of the audience, because they're different every night, because they're always very vocal, and so sometimes you kind of have to, you can't say something because it's going to be buried under a laugh. And then the next night when you think, I might have to wait for a second to say this so that it can be heard, it's completely quiet. You know, people are sort of inhaling in shock instead of laughing. And it takes, you know, it's a real study in audience dynamics in terms of the amount of people that it takes to have a response. At Playwrights, because it was 200 people, I feel like if 10% of the audience, you know, found something funny, it was only 20 people laughing. And 20 people laughing in a house of 200, it's a little weird to feel like you're the only person, you know, you and 19 other people find something funny. But in a Broadway house, it becomes 90 people, and that's like a pretty big group of people to find something funny. So you don't feel completely alone. So those laughs become real laughs, and then those 90 people, that kind of spread. So there's, the audience dynamics are larger on Broadway, and I think the show works in a bigger house in that way, because the responses are larger, and the groups, the sort of the different factions of what people think are funny are larger.
What's more, I guess, what do you anticipate more, the very first preview night or opening night?
I think the very first preview is a little more unsettling, and just because it's really the first time that you're playing it in that house, or, you know, and you're not sure how it's going to play. The opening night, by the time opening night actually comes, you've been doing it for long enough that it, you know, at least here in on Broadway and everything, it's a little bit more of a celebration. You have friends there. Everyone has friends there. It's sort of everyone's dressed up. There's a party afterwards. So it's a little bit more like a celebration of the play. So it doesn't, it's fun, and there's anticipation about it being fun, but it doesn't, there's not the pressure of the kind of old-time opening night where you, all the critics ran out to write their reviews and you went to Sardi's and waited for them to come out, kind of pressure of opening night. It's a little bit more like, it's almost like the culmination of a lot of the hard work that you've been doing in the weeks preceding. So I think the first preview has a little more sweat on it.
You mentioned that you have kids. So what are your days like, not the matinee days, but just like your normal 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock show days? You hanging out with them? Are you trying not to talk? Do you have any like special, I guess, rituals that you like to do pre-show?
I don't. I mean, this is the first week that we're really settling into not having. We have had rehearsals pretty much every day. Just like I said, tweaking little things and lighting things, and so this is our first real week. Sometimes my wife lets me sleep in a little bit, and she gets up with the kids, and then sometimes I get up with the kids and then bring them to school, and then go home and take a little bit of a nap. But in general, I don't really have any interesting rituals. I try to kind of avoid rituals because I guess my fear would be that I would do something and then have a great show and then I would say, oh, I have to do that again every night, which I don't know, you know, whatever that would be.
Have to walk past 44 streets five times before you...
Right, exactly. Or like, oh, I know, I had that certain, you know, like I had that dish at that Chinese restaurant and I had this amazing show, so it's like after eating that dish 300 times, I, you know... So I think I try to avoid those kinds of things, but, you know, as now that we're back into a routine, I think I have to figure out how to do some kind of exercise, which will help me to sleep at night afterwards also. You know, I mean, I think that's the trick for me with having kids is, coming home after the show and trying to go to sleep because, you know, it's an energizing thing to do a play. And I'm pretty wired afterwards, even though I'm sort of both physically exhausted, but I'm kind of emotionally and mentally pretty, at the top of my, I don't know, top of my senses.
Yeah.
So I get home and my wife does me the good deed of trying to get to sleep before I get home so she can get up early with the kid. So my house is quiet, the kids are asleep, and I'm pretty wired, and I'm thinking about the play, and I'm thinking about, you know, everything. So I think, doing some exercise once now we're, you know, getting myself a little bit more physically, so I'm actually just physically tired.
Uh-huh.
But I wish I had a more interesting answer, because I don't. I know actors have crazy rituals. I think I've fallen into that trap before, and I've decided that I don't know what causes a good show versus a mediocre show, and so I have just decided that I don't have control of that, which is good.
Did you always want to be an actor?
I did. I always wanted to be an actor. I would think I was in a school play when I was in fourth or fifth grade. I was in the all school Christmas pageant. I played the little boy, and I think I was in fourth grade. And I just felt really comfortable on stage, and I've always wanted to do it. Yeah, I've certainly gone through large chunks of time where I've doubted if it's a smart thing to do, just given the kind of the life of being an actor. But I've always loved collaborating with people, and I've always loved the theater as a, you know, as a place to go and to sort of see life reflected. And I've always loved being a part of I have always wanted to be around it and part of it, and I've been lucky to have been able to do that. And I also, you know, I love going to movies and seeing great acting, and I just admire it as an art form and as a craft and as a skill. So it's something that I've always wanted to do. I've gone through chunks of time where I've wondered about the practical nature of doing it, and wondering if I'm good enough and if I sort of have what it takes to actually make a life of it. But I've never stopped loving it. And, you know, and people have asked me, you know, people who aren't actors, like, how do you do the same thing every night? And, you know, when I'm in a longer running show, and to me, it's just, it's so not the same thing every night. And it's so, you know, vastly different every night. And also, it's so rewarding to perform for people who are appreciating something. And I think it's, you know, when people have an office job or whatever and they don't, you know, I said to a friend, you know, who's a reporter actually, who's a really good reporter, but I said, you know, the feeling when you write a great piece and when your editor or someone says, hey, that was a great piece. I'm really glad you wrote that. You know, basically when you're an actor on stage, you kind of get that kind of positive feedback every night. So it makes work a nice place to go, you know.
Yeah.
He said that his editor almost never said that to him. So.
now you have him questioning himself. Good job.
Like, why does my editor say that? It's nice to get, you know, there's something kind of, I think especially when everything comes together, like in this play where, you know, it's smart and thought-provoking, and it leaves people unsettled and sort of walking away from the theater with something to discuss. It's like you're actually doing not only an artistic thing, but sort of something that's potentially, you know, civic, or something that leaves people different than they came. And so it feels good to be part of that.
When you get a role, how do you prepare? Is it always the same, or is it constantly evolving?
Yeah, it's constantly evolving depending on the project. And I think, you know, I mean, one thing that I always tell younger actors, I think the most important thing to be able to be is flexible, and in terms of the way that you work, and sort of feel out, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a process that works for you of how to access certain things within yourself and how to analyze text and get the best out of a role, but at the end of the day, you have to be flexible and work with the way that a company that you're a part of is working, because it's really, truly, truly, a truly, truly collaborative art form. And I feel like a lot of people sort of get settled in on a way that they work and then end up in a company where the director doesn't relate to your vocabulary and doesn't relate to the way that you're working on something. And all of a sudden there's tension, or there's, it's not like a pure collaboration. Whereas I feel like if you're flexible, with the way that you approach something, and you are really open to hearing what a director and what other actors are bringing to the table, then you can, if you can be flexible in those moments, then you might surprise yourself and do something that you never thought that you could do. And you might also, you know, teach the director something, a way that he or she never worked before. So I think it's important to know how to, you know, use yourself in the way that, you know, you best can use yourself and access things within yourself. But then I think it's important to be really flexible about the way that you work on something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I kind of liken it a little bit to, you know, to playing basketball. I think if you sort of are like, I always I always come into the game with a lot of energy. I always shoot, you know, I always shoot threes. And this kind of a thing. It's like, at the end of the day, you have to come into the game and see what the game is and see, you know, they're covering me really hard out here. I can drive and, just having a sort of a flexibility about the way that you play your game and also what the coach is interested in you doing and also what the strengths of the other players are. And so you say, maybe there's someone who shoots threes better than me and the coach wants me to do this and, you know, I'm flexible. And like I said, you might learn something about yourself and say, I never knew that I could do that. I always thought of myself as this kind of an actor. I always thought, you know, that my strength was in whatever, emoting or being, or sort of being the center of attention. Whereas like in this production, I think I'm really learning a lot about myself by fitting into this ensemble in this certain way, by listening or by being this type of character. So I just think, I've seen it so many times in plays that I've been in that there's battles, personality battles, and it's because people are sort of rigid in the way that they think about the way they have to do a play or they have to approach a role in a certain way. And I feel like when everyone is a little more open to a pure collaboration, people really surprise themselves, and it's when the best work gets done.
You kind of answered part of this question, but what's your advice to actors?
Yeah, I think that's really my advice to actors. My advice to actors is to have as much experience and as much, you know, in life as you can, to work as much as you can with people who you respect and admire, to really, you know, make your best effort to listen to people and listen to what people are asking you to do, even if you disagree with it, because you'll learn a lot about yourself in the way that you try to, you know, for example, if you're with a director who you early on in the process think, I'm not sure that this director knows what they're talking about, a lot of actors sort of tend to say, well, I don't think that's a good idea. You know, the way that you're asking me to do that doesn't make sense and blah, blah, blah. And then there's this sort of battle as opposed to saying, all right, you know what I'm going to do today in this rehearsal? I'm just going to really fully try to do what this director is asking me to do. And both of you, the director and yourself, will learn something about the character and about that moment that you're working on. And sometimes, a lot of times, the director will say, you know what, you totally accomplished what I was asking you to do, and I don't think that it's right, and I'm glad that we did that, and now let's try something else. At the very least, you know, you gain someone's respect because you're actually, you have the skill to follow their idea. I feel like, you know, the best advice that I can give is to, I do feel like the word collaboration, I'm tossing it around a lot in this interview, but I feel like it's the key to everything. I mean, it's the key probably to marriage and to friendship and all the things, but I really feel like in the theater and in acting, it's the ultimate thing, and I think people sort of use it, people use the word and say, like, I love to collaborate with people, but what that means to them is that they like doing their thing and they like other people to tell them that they're doing a good job, but at the end of the day, like, I think a real collaboration is a real give and take, and I feel like my advice to actors is always to ask yourself, how can I accomplish what someone else is asking me to do, and how can I change the way that I look at this to maybe accomplish this in a way that I never thought that I would. And like I said, I think those kinds of collaborations, you end up bringing out the best in each other, and so you end up a better actor for it. The piece that you're in ends up better. Everyone looks better, and everyone is better because they've been working together. I mean, it's always two minds are better than one, and three minds, and so on. So when you get, you know, like in our play, when you get seven people and doing a great play with a great director and with great designers and producers that are really involved and interested, you know, you get a lot of minds working on something and not a not like some sort of dictator or sort of diva who's trying to drag everyone along for, you know, their ride.
What'd I tell you? Jeremy's a great guy, right? So thank you, Jeremy, for taking the time to talk to me. And thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thanks once again for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I will talk to you soon.